Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Goodness, welcome to Moran Monday on the Horn. You know, all weekend long, I just sit there making a little list of Morans for Moran Monday. And I order it, and I reorder it, and I go, this one needs to go. And then it all falls to pieces. Because just as soon as I think I've got everything in their proper order, you know, Herman Cain saying that po folks need to buy used food, things like that. Just as soon as I think I've got everything squared away and nice and tidy, some right-wing loon comes along and completely upsets the apple cart. Now, I don't know why I even bother. Because the competition on Moran Monday is obviously fierce. Ferocious, even. That's right, kiddies and cousins, uncles and aunts, brothers and sisters, mommies and daddies, it's Moran Monday on the Horn. Step right up, step right up. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Hurry, 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 behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, our sights, or sounds, as the case may be, of Morans that will shock you, surprise you, amaze you, and leave you breathless. Ladies, please don't let go of your purses. The Morans cannot be trusted. We strongly advise against bringing small children into the Moran Monday tent, lest the Moranity rub off on them. No one will be admitted to the Moran tent after the first 5 minutes. Head for the hills, and you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Almost said Martians. Or moon men. There's moon men on Moran Monday, too. Morans everywhere. Like I said, I had a nice little list of Morans for Moran Monday. And then I got an email from David in Tennessee. Oh, by the way, Bob, did you see this one? No, but he rocketed straight to the top of the list. You remember Brian Fisher of the American Family Association, right? This guy just opens his mouth and crazy just falls out. It doesn't even dribble. It's more like something you'd expect from The Exorcist. Remember the scene? You're right, it's dinner time. We won't go any further. Brian Fisher, highly paid radio host of the American Family Association, invited to speak at the Values Voters Summit in Washington, D.C. Thanks, very definite thanks to the folks at TPM for grabbing this video. It's precious beyond belief. Here we go. Now, understand, it's some intense baseball this weekend, right? Yesterday, the Brew Crew just opened up a can of whoop-ass on the Cardinals. Fine by me, I say. I'm kind of rooting for the Brewers in this one. Their single A team used to be in Charleston before it became an affiliate of the Pirates. No, this is not the sports talk part of the program. You don't have to dial away or anything. But Yeah, and the way the Cardinals got it with that one run game beating the Phillies, and exciting stuff, especially if you're a baseball fan. And apparently, Brian Fisher of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, is a baseball fan because he's a fan of God. Really? No, not kidding.
Now, by God's mercy, we have not been hit by a Muslim attack since 9/11. I suggest, in part, we have Major League Baseball to thank. You remember that immediately after 9/11, Major League Baseball converted the seventh inning stretch from the singing of Take Me Out to the Ball Game to the singing of God Bless America. Now, God Bless America is not just a song, it is a prayer. When we sing that, we are inviting God to bless America, to stand beside her, and to guide her through the night with a light from above. So for one brief shining moment every night, Major League Baseball has converted our stadiums into cathedrals. In which tens of thousands of ordinary Americans lift their hearts and voices as one and ask God to watch over and protect the United States.
Crazy. You know, do these goobers actually believe this stuff? I guess so. This really has much more of a feeling of prayer meeting Wednesday, but that's mainly because the Values Voters Summit was this past weekend. I mean, they were just up to all they were just up to, they were just swimming in values. People talking about how Rick Perry is a good, fine, upstanding Christian, a follower of the Prince of Peace, who has a passion for executing people in Texas. I guess it's lost on the values voters people that their avatar, their God, their however you care to, yeah, was executed by the state. But then that's just lost on them. Atne ute ait bre, those religious fundamentalists, if you one what I may. So once again, the religious right, no, the religious wrong, the fundamentalists, intrude and insert themselves into something that was marginally enjoyable and try to take it away from the rest of us. You know what? That clip needs to be played all over the country relentlessly. Because henceforward, anybody who sings God Bless America at a baseball game is standing with Brian Fisher. Plain and simple. Aren't they? Silence is, after all, what? Yeah, acceptance. But it was a veritable carnival at the Voters Values Summit. There was crazy all over the place. And, of course, I suppose the biggest manifestation of religious crazy, and, you know, don't call this intolerance on my part. I'm tolerant of it all. I just happen to, you know, acknowledge the fact that, well, here we go. Let's go to the biggest manifestation of crazy of the weekend. I'm talking, of course, about Reverend Jeffress. Yeah, by the way, Ron Paul won the straw poll at the Voters Values Summit. Laughable in its own right. Now, that was a clip from Brian Fisher. Willard Romney actually had the courage to call him out. And did so.
He's a noble, a citizen. and they strengthen the nation. We should remember that decency and civility are values too. One of the speakers who will follow me today has crossed that line, I think. Poisonous language doesn't advance our cause. It's never softened a single heart nor changed a single mind. The blessings of faith carry the responsibility of civil and respectful debate. The task before us is to focus on the conservative beliefs and the values that unite us.
Now, the for-profit media cannot be left out of our list of morons, because that clip has run all weekend long. But they left out the part about one of the people who will speak after me today, by reference, Brian Fisher. And you remember Brian Fisher. Brian Fisher is the man who wants God to kill all the grizzly bears. No, really. Brian Fisher did not like being called out at the Voters Values Voter. Who gives a damn summit?
Governor Ron DeSantis made a statement about speaking before you.
Oh, yeah. Were you the guy he was referring to?
Did you have a reaction to that? I thought it was speechless and tawdry. Do you think he was just kind of listening to the winds of the New York Times?
I think he allowed the New York Times, the Southern Poverty Law Center, the people of America, he allowed them to dictate the content of his speech at the Values Voter Summit. And right there, people ought to be concerned about that.
Right there, people ought to be, because, well, everybody knows that Willard Romney is a member of the Southern Poverty Law Center and the New York Times and People for the American Way. And why didn't he go ahead and mention NAMBLA? The right-wingers love so to get on the NAMBLA train. It's probably not a good way to put that. This was, like I said, this was a circus. This was a real live, honest to goodness, crazy fest. The brown acid was more than on display. But of course, it all goes back to the Reverend Jeffress and his remarks about this was apparently. An orchestrated attack on Willard Romney for being a Mormon. And this is what got it cooking.
Decision for conservative evangelical Christians right now is going to be, do we prefer somebody who is truly a believer in Jesus Christ or somebody who is a good moral person but is a part of a cult? And it's not politically correct to say, but it's true, Mormonism is a cult. And for those reasons, besides Governor Romney's lack of consistency on social issues, I think Rick Perry is the most electable. And when I was watching it, I did not take that he was booing the soldier before because he was gay, but booing the position that the soldier was taking. So I think there's certainly a room for debate on that. I think all of us are grateful for any man or woman who serves in our military, regardless of their sexual orientation.
Would you agree that gay service members who become public should be prosecuted?
Well, so that was the beginning of the firestorm. Mormonism is a cult. Now, not to wax entirely too academic here, but anybody who's ever taken, Anthropology 101 or read about it, or all religions, all of them, every last one, begin as cults. All of them. And of course, the Reverend Jeffress, a member, a Baptist pastor in Dallas, hot meat kettle, has doubled down, even going so far as to appear on Chris Matthews' program earlier today. So, yeah, well, it's a theological cult. Keep digging, Pastor. Brother. But we have morons, and of course the cult business, because the for profit media have such a hard time. Coming up with anything fresh or relevant. The only question they had to ask for all of the Republican candidates this past weekend on the little babble shows was whether or not they too thought Mormonism is a cult. You gotta wonder if Pastor Jeffress has gotten around to finding out that in Mormon theology, Jesus and Satan are, you know, brothers from planet Kolob. Because his head's gonna explode right off his neck when he does, if he hasn't already. You see? You see? And then there's the business about Brigham Young. I'm not talking about the university. I'm talking about the actual prophet of God. Brigham Young had a vision in 1870. He said he flew to the dark side of the moon. No, I'm not queuing that up. He said he flew to the dark side of the moon and met the moon men. Those were his words, the moon men. He said they were just like us, except they were taller and dressed like Quakers. Dressed like Quakers. They couldn't be that much like us, because there's no air on the moon! Moon men. And that's a part of the accepted doctrinal theology of the Church of LSD, LDS. But understand, I'd like to just see a steel cage death match between Pastor Jeffress and, you know, some high and mighty Mormon. Well, I mean, without the death part, I'm nonviolent. Maybe they could just scream heresies at each other for a while. Well, you believe that God lives on planet Kolob. Well, you believe that God raped a little girl. Do not! Virgin birth. Oh, sorry. Well, you believe that men went to... That Brigham Young went to the moon. Well, you believe that the earth stood still one day, which means that the sun rotates around the earth. Do not! You're fundamentalist. Oh, sorry. So I don't want to be seen as picking on any particular religion. They're all pretty much lunacy. See how I worked in another moon reference there? Oh, I'm on a good one. That's a witty one. It all points out the fallacy of relying on one individual's particular religious fantasy over another's. When it comes to selecting people who will, you know, run the government. It's nuts. Yeah, I know. The crowd noise thanks, David. The crowd noise in the Brian Fisher thing was pretty bad. But in essence, he said that Mitt Romney's calling of him out was tasteless and tawdry. Tasteless and tawdry. Tawdry's a pretty big word for a fundamentalist. Now, according to the Free Online Dictionary, it means gaudy and cheap in nature or appearance. shameful or indecent. You know, that's troublesome, using tawdry to describe what Mitt Romney said about, you know, Brian Fisher's religious hatred.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Yeah, neither do I, Inigo. But then again, Brian Fisher talks to people with the IQ of cucumbers most days. And as a consequence, he could speak to them in Klingon, and as long as he said Jesus every 15 seconds, he'd be okay. Wouldn't it be nice if we could get a movement of people refusing to sing God Bless America because Brian Fisher is a hate monger? I'd like that. I'd like that a lot. William asking, were the Moon Men selling oatmeal or green cheese? We don't really know. Actually, what that is it is a reflection of the fact, and it's something that most people don't acknowledge or don't realize, is that when Joseph Smith created Mormonism, he created a little hybrid of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. That's why Joseph Smith becomes the seal of the prophets. That's why Brigham Young flies to the moon. Remember, in Islam's mythology, Muhammad flies to Jerusalem. Well, that's still on the planet. I mean, come on, it's the 19th century. We got to upgrade a little bit. So consequently, Brigham Young flies to the moon. But whether it's Mormons or fundamentalists or the Roman Catholics or Orthodoxy or Muslims or... It's all religion. It's all based on stuff that was made up, that you have to rely on everything but your intellect to get around in. If you start using your intellect, you're done. So those are our early Moran nominees, although God knows we've got a lot more. Like I said, the story of the week after Reverend Jeffress's comment, and we talked about it a little bit on Friday night's program. The hobby for the Sunday battle press the meat shows became one of can you book me a Republican presidential candidate so we can find out if they think Mormonism's a cult too. Here's Herb Cain's take on it. He's something, that Herb. Oh, where'd Herb go? Well, Herb had other stupid things to say, because mainly Herb is a stupid man. It turns out, by the way, he's also a liar. Now, I don't know if you caught this last week when, for some reason, known but to God or the Flying Spaghetti Monster, he showed up on Lawrence O'Donnell's program wherein Lawrence challenged him for, where were you during the civil rights marches? Well, I was a teenager, and my daddy said it wouldn't be good for me to get all mixed up in that. There's only one problem. During the height of the civil rights struggle, Herb wasn't a teenager. He was an adult. And he let other people go out there and take the beatings. He let other people go out there and take the killings. He let other people go out and engage in the struggle that would benefit him, while he sat on the sidelines. I'll be right there. As soon as it's safe. But in addition to being asked by Candy Crowley about whether or not Mitt Romney's a cultist, he also took time to speak to his tax plan. He's got a tax plan for you and for me. It's precious, that tax plan. Just listen.
Is there any exception, as you see it, in this consumption tax? Would you, except for clothing, perhaps, except for food, would food be a consumption?
No, you don't have to do that.
No food,
no, you don't have
clothing?
To do that. No, because that 6 percentage point difference makes up for a lot of the sales tax that people will have to pay. Here's the thing that people don't talk
about. I think I misunderstood you.
Okay.
You would make an exemption for food and clothing?
No exemptions
for sales tax.
No, you don't need those exemptions.
So a poor person is paying the same amount of tax on groceries as I am.
Right. Now.
Does that sound fair to you just in a vacuum?
Yes, it does sound fair, but because of the other point that I'm about to make. If they need to buy a car or a home or some hard goods that are used, they pay no taxes.
What, Edith?
Herb Cain's economic plan is for us to buy things that are used. Walmart is going to love him for that. You can almost see the phone being picked up in Bentonville, Arkansas now, can't you? Somebody get me that Herb Cain on the line. What, his name's Herm? Oh, thought it was Herb. Get him on the line. We sell new stuff here in Walmart. We sell new stuff from China. And we want to keep selling new stuff from China. What's he talking about telling people to buy used things? Used food? Dumpster diving? Really? Yeah, because he's going to cut he's going to cut 6% off the tax rate. 3% of which would only be coming out of the payroll taxes on the employee side, never mind the number of people who aren't employed. He's already told us that it's his fault, or their fault, that they're unemployed. Tried to run away from that one, too, but nah, it's stuck. Now, Herb doesn't understand what regressive taxation means. You do, of course. But Herb doesn't. Herb doesn't understand that even if you've still got fuel taxes, they're not going away. They build the roads. Sin taxes aren't going away, and most states that have them are not going to be willing to get rid of their sales tax. There's no... And that by virtue of being regressive, sales taxes hit people with less money harder than they hit people with more money. Obvious, one might think, but not to Herb Cain, because Herb Cain doesn't give a damn about people who are struggling because it's their fault they're poor. This is, speaking of cults, this is classic Neo-Calvinism, right? Sure. Food is not out of his sales tax plan. So not only would you be paying state sales tax, you'd be paying a federal sales tax on food that you need to survive. Ramen noodles for everybody. Jesus. But this is the thing is, this man keeps showing up on programs wherein he is has no business. He went on the Christian Broadcasting Network. This was precious. Like I said, this is Moran Monday, so we're just getting them all out of the way as quickly as we possibly can. He went on the Christian Broadcasting Network to answer some questions. And David Brody of CBN asked what are being referred to as softball questions. I think we need to haul out another movie reference here and put it to much better use. These aren't softball questions. These are Balchinian questions. People who are familiar with the first Men in Black movie will understand. But sitting down with David Brody, he sought to find out what Herb Kane's foreign policy brief is.
Are you ready for the gotcha questions? They're coming from the media and others on foreign policy. Who's the president of Uzbekistan? All, you know, all of this stuff. It's coming.
Yes.
And how are you dealing with that?
I'm ready for the gotcha questions. And they are already starting to come. And when they ask me who's the president of Uzbekistan, I'm going to say, you know, I don't know. Do you know? And then I'm going to say, how's that going to create one job? I want to focus on the top priorities of this country. That's what leaders do. They make sure that the nation is focused on the critical issues with critical solutions. Knowing who is the head of some of these small, insignificant states around the world, I don't think that is something that's critical to focusing on national security and getting this economy going. When I get ready to go visit that country, I'll know who it is. But until then, I want to focus on the big issues that we need to solve.
Yeah, he'll be like Dan Quayle going to South America and saying he wished he'd spent going to Latin America. That's what I'm going to Latin America. I wish I'd spent more time studying Latin. And even David Brody got it wrong. He called it Uzbekistan. It's Uzbekistan. And I don't know if the Uzbek leadership has gotten wind of Herb Kane's comments, but I can't think they'll be pleased. And even though he doesn't know who the leader of Uzbekistan is, he might want to be glad that he's not there. Because if I'm not mistaken, they're one of those allies that we have that's kind of an icky little alliance. Remember, we used Uzbek air bases to bomb the snot out of Afghanistan, didn't we? Yeah, I think so. And if I'm not mistaken, Uzbekistan is led by a dictator, a despot, who at least at some point in time was said to have boiled his political opponents alive. And just because we like to have a little bit of we've got a public service element to this program, and so just as a public service to Herb Kane and his Uzbekistan comment, the president of Uzbekistan is Islam Karimov. It's kind of a brutal place. They don't allow their Tajik population, for instance, to teach their young in the Tajik language. And Karimov's regime has been known to destroy their artworks. And then there's Uzbekistan's presence or place in history. It was at a place called Issus that Alexander the Great fought a huge battle. He built one of his cities out of nowhere there. The Oxus River, which is no longer called the Oxus River, flows through Uzbekistan. And the crossing of the Oxus River was a huge moment in the career of Alexander the Great. Not that I would expect Herb Cain to even know who Alexander the Great was. Samarkand on the Silk Road was a place of great mystery and excitement and adventure. But not to Herb Cain. When he's president and he gets ready to go visit there, he'll learn who their president is. Sadly for you and me, citizens of the United States, and perhaps for the rest of the world, it will by then be too late. Ooh, Becky, 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 Stan, Stan. I wish I could call it up here. I actually took that recording and subjected it to Songify. And I got to tell you, Herb Cain sounds really cool saying, ooh, Becky, 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 Stan, Stan on Songify. There is no small amount of Moranity running loose for this evening's Moran Monday on the Horn. No doubt about it. Of course, by now I'm sure you're aware that after all the time that we have spent here, you and I, we, us, in discussing the Occupy Wall Street movement and in discussing the October 2011 movement in D.C., and the problem one always faces in such situations of agent provocateur, it came as no surprise to find out that one was involved with an altercation at the National Air and Space Museum this past weekend. It turns out that there was a peaceful march to protest the presence of a drone exhibit. You know, our drones, the ones that have the computer virus in them now that the Air Force or the military or the Pentagon can't seem to figure out how it got there or what it's doing. It's not stopping the missions. No, there's a display at the National Air and Space Museum of these drone aircraft, and I can understand how folks would be conflicted about that and think that it's not exactly something about which we should be proud. Unmanned aircraft run like video games from a remote location in Nevada, loaded with Hellfire missiles that are frequently targeted onto innocents, you know, women, children, weddings, funerals, that kind of thing, that are in fact used for the extrajudicial assassination of American citizens, at least two so far of which we are aware. And so some folks from October 2011 marched down to the Air and Space Museum in D.C. Along the way, however, their ranks were infiltrated by a turd on two legs by the name of Patrick Howley. Patrick Howley is an assistant editor for the American Spectator, a right-wing magazine funded by a right-wing thug by the name of Singer. Mr. Singer has funded a lot of right-wingery. His name is Paul Singer. He is a hedge fund manager. He is estimated to be worth over $900 million. You know the best way to become a billionaire? Start with over $900 million. He is a mover and a shaker and a hanger out with Justice Clarence Thomas. And he is a funder of the American Spectator. The Risten, that's with a W, the Risten Fellowship at the Manhattan Institute is funded by Paul Singer, who's also a major donor to the American Spectator. The American Spectator, you might recall, was the creator of the Arkansas Project, which involved the hunting of Bill Clinton. But at any rate, this jackass, Patrick Howley, just sidled into the protest march, and when it got to the National Air and Space Museum, he's the one who caused the ruckus. Tried to get inside, got pepper sprayed, and later proudly wrote, "As far as anyone knew, I was part of this cause, a cause that I had infiltrated the day before in order to mock and undermine in the pages of the American Spectator, and I wasn't giving up before I had my story. Under a cloud of pepper spray, I forced myself into the doors and sprinted blindly across the floor of the Air and Space Museum." Of course, being right-wingers, they can't be honest about it. They scrubbed portions of Howley's post. I suppose because their readers are not bright enough to catch, right, yeah. But there's only one way to deal with this, and that is by simple communication. If you happen to go to one of these events, do not be put off if somebody says, "Hey, who are you? Where are you from? What do you want? What do you believe in?" Because the goals are nonviolent and the goals are perfectly legitimate. Chris Hedges has a piece in Truth Out today, republished from Truthdig, in which he notes that the young people at Occupy Wall Street can almost always spot the cops, because they're the ones wandering around like Martians, moon men, I guess. You know, they're a little bit taller and they dress like Quakers. Wandering around like moon men asking, "Take me to your leader." And that's really the only way you can deal with this sort of thing, is by being prepared day in and with everybody. "Hi, my name's..." "Who are you?" And these agents provocateurs will eventually out themselves in that simple act of communication. Go and read Chris Hedges' article on the Occupy Wall Street movement. It is a good one. It centers on his interview of a 17-year-old by the name of Ketchup. Apparently, it is a thing within within that movement to cast off one's given name and use a pseudonym. It's not all that unusual. And Ketchup does a pretty damn good job of talking about the way they're going about building community. Excuse me. And in building that community, they're actually using democratic principles. Democratic principles that are nowhere to be found in evidence in almost any other portion of the United States of America. Paul Krugman also noting today, eloquently as ever, in a piece called "Panic of the Plutocrats," something, well, I was proud, frankly. because Paul Krugman in his column, well, it was from yesterday, actually, noted something that we talked about here last week. That when you get to the bottom of it, all the derision, all the mocking, is born of one thing: fear. Pure fear. The 1% is afraid of the 99%. Now, no one is saying, and in fact, Chris Hedges' article contains a passage from Young Ketchup in which she says, you know, we've caught people saying, if they say things like kill the cops, or they have, or attack the cops, or F the cops, we run them out. We are nonviolent and we will not tolerate it. There was another sign that said, kill the Jew bankers. Well, that certainly sounds like a Ron Paul supporter, doesn't it? And they ran him out. Another individual was carrying around a sign with the N-word on it. It was dealt with quickly and summarily. Krugman, in his column, notes several of these instances. He says, consider first how Republican politicians have portrayed the modest-sized, if growing, demonstrations which have involved some confrontations with the police. Confrontations that seem to have involved a lot of police overreaction, but nothing one could call a riot. And there has, in fact, been nothing so far to match the behavior of Tea Party crowds in the summer of 2009. You do remember that, I trust? When they were threatening people and appearing at town hall rallies with guns strapped on their hips. Nonetheless, Krugman continues, Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, has denounced mobs and the pitting of Americans against Americans. The GOP presidential candidates have weighed in, with Mitt Romney accusing the protesters of waging class warfare, while Herman Cain calls them anti-American. My favorite, however, is Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, who, for some reason, worries that the protesters will start seizing iPads because they believe rich people don't deserve to have them. Michael Bloomberg has gone somewhat insane, saying that the Occupy Wall Street protesters are trying to take the jobs away from people working in this city. A statement, Krugman notes, that bears no resemblance to the movement's actual goals. He continues, and if you were listening to the talking heads on CNBC, you learned that the protesters let their freak flags fly and are aligned with Lenin. And he comes to the same conclusion we reached last week. They're terrified. They're afraid. Even Fox News was run away. This is Nat Sound. Nat Sound, that's a term of art. You know, it's one of those complicated broadcasting terms, natural sound. This is Nat Sound of the Occupy Wall Street folks peacefully, nonviolently, gathering around Geraldo Jerry Rivera, the man who opened Al Capone's vault and exposed America to a whole lot of empty. Just like basically what goes on at Fox. No, they surrounded Jerry Rivera and wouldn't let him do his Radio Rwanda-esque disinformation.
All right, you're looking at the crowd. This is Sunday afternoon in New York City. There are many hundreds, I'd say into the low thousands, here in Zuccotti Park. We're talking with Dr. Cornel West and Tavis Smiley. You heard John Stewart. Now I think the same guys who are in Madison, Wisconsin are here. So Tavis, this is the point, aside from the...
They're not the same thing.
Okay, I got 30 seconds, Charles. You heard our friends Dr. West and Tavis give the progressive point of view. Why would an African-American person be a Republican?
Well, if you want the country to do well, the politics of division should be over. Blacks have voted for Democrats for 60 years. 99%, you can say they're not brainwashed, whatever you want to say, but their plight in life has not changed dramatically over the last 50 or 60 years. It might be time to listen to different points of view because perhaps they might work.
Gotta go. Tavis, thank you. Dr. West, thank you. Good luck with your tour.
Yeah, gotta go. That was actually Fox's own, that was Fox's coverage. But the beauty of it was the stuff that RT captured. The reason that Jerry Rivera said, gotta go, it was getting louder and louder and louder. And Jerry knew that Roger Ailes and Rupert, wouldn't approve of Fox using its own resources to hear hundreds, or by Jerry Rivera's count, thousands of people chanting in unison, in unity, Fox News lies. Fox News lies. Over and over and over. Rather an inspiring display of nonviolent determination. Wouldn't you say? Yes. Email coming in from David in Tennessee with regard to Brian Fisher, the American Family Association's Brian Fisher. There's that Fisher freak, and then there's shots, those shots of Pickles and W sitting with Nolly Ryan at the Ranger games. Fox is making damn sure we see that pair of bushes. Meanwhile, the protesting Rev's use of tawdry was dog whistling that old saw, the harlot churches, aimed at all the churches evangelicals think are not the real and true church, because remember, they're the only ones going into heaven. So that's just a smattering of the stuff that we have for Moran Monday here on the Horn. Now, a quick program reminder. Tomorrow evening, beginning at 7 p.m., we will not be on the air at the regular 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tomorrow evening at 7 p.m., we will have another of Dr. Bill O'Brien's American History Chats for you from 7 to 9 p.m. It will be available both on the Horn audio stream and on the Horn's Ustream channel. So do tune in. I ask you very sincerely, because it's American history, and those who have followed the program can tell you it is American history like you're not going to learn it anywhere else. And it is of inestimable value. Because if you follow Dr. Bill's American History Chats, what you're going to find out is that there's a lot of people out there who are making stuff up on their own and telling you it's history when it's not. What you get with Dr. Bill's American History Chats, however, is the straight stuff, unwatered and no chaser. So join us tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. Also, I will be gone from the microphone Thursday and Friday. I have unavoidable travel that has to be attended to. Going to be going to a meeting in southeastern Georgia on behalf of Coal River Mountain Watch. It'll take me away from here Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So no regular shows Thursday and Friday. Maybe I'll try to get a note out to John Fox if he's not on the road somewhere work, and he's, well, burning the candle at both ends and holding a fire in the middle, too. Bless his heart, he's been working himself crazy. I don't know, though. Just plan on me not being here Thursday and Friday. There, tweets will go out if John's able to fill the slot. Thanks to those of you who have contributed over the weekend. It was very, very kind. A number of you stepped up and matched our good buddy John's $50 challenge. So that helps out immensely. It's the 10th day of October, and that means we're a third of the way done with the month. We are not a third of the way toward, let's see, 3 into 20. No, we're not a third of the way into the fundraising goal. But with your participation, we will get there. Remember, it only takes 250 people doing $10 a piece to help us meet the fundraising goals. Many people do more than 10, some do 10, some do 5. Whatever you can do is much appreciated. And we all understand that every single contribution that comes into the horn is one that is born of your sacrifice. So thank you very kindly. We'll take a little break and come back. The phone lines are open. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Follow the Moskva down to Gorky Park, listening to the wind of change. August summer night, soldiers.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total genius. We got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.doublegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95? Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Wow, where did hour number one go? It is Moran Monday on the horn, and these things do tend to go quickly. Oh, yeah, by the way, I had all that stuff all sort of ordered and prioritized, and then I heard Brian Fisher declare that God bless America at baseball games saved us from being hit by the Muslims again, because, you know, God bless America goes up into space and it forms this wall of God bless Americanness. And Muslims can't get through it. It's kind of like vampires and garlic, don't you know? But no, one of the things that I intended to kick off the program with was by wishing you all a very happy Columbus Day. My good friend, American Indian advocate Matt Sherman, says that we should that the way one celebrates Columbus Day is by going out, getting drunk, getting lost, and then giving someone syphilis. It's about how it worked out, isn't it? You do know that Columbus's crew was a bunch of ne'er-do-wells, right? Yeah. I was reminded of that because Ray just wrote in a minute ago and said, Columbus Day? Well, why not a Stalin Day or a Christian Crusade Day? Sorry, not much difference there. You could also, of course, I suppose, celebrate Columbus Day by going out and stealing some stuff from someone and then declaring them to be a heretic and cutting off their hands and leaving them to bleed to death. Columbus did that. Honest to God. I mean, really, it's 2011. Can we please take Columbus Day off the calendar? The Italians will get over it. Are you familiar with the story of what happened when the archaeological evidence about the Vikings being in North America first came out? Oh, I mean, there was an uproar. Nasty uproar. Because Columbus had been by then transformed into a hero. It's well past time we stopped honoring Columbus. In fact, I read, I was reading on a blog earlier today, that they stopped Columbus Day in the Bahamas. Because the Bahamas, of course, were the first place he made landfall. Then he landed on the island of Hispaniola and everything went to hell. Mainly for the Taino people and the Cacique people and, Arawaks. The Tainos were the first people he came in contact with, Columbus. I believe it was they whose hands he cut off and left to bleed to death in the name of Jesus Christ. Can we please, really? I mean, I'm not scrubbing history. Not at all. We have to acknowledge the horrible things that Christopher Columbus did. But to give the man a holiday... The mail didn't run today! Because the federal government, apparently, still, I didn't realize it, recognizes this as a day worthy of celebration, veneration. Is it really? I don't know any Indians, and I say Indians because I've been told by them, look, you gave us one name, just stick to it. Don't go with Aboriginals or Native Americans or, you know, personally, I like First Peoples. But no, we're Indians, that's what I was told. Because they are many peoples. And all of them were decimated. No, they weren't decimated. They were genocided. It was Eugene Finnerman over the weekend who had a posting. Eugene is the Internet's most brilliant satirist. Just this past weekend, he posted something called Leif Erikson Day. You know, getting Eugene's musings via your RDA of irony is completely free. You can go to Finnerman Works, FinnermanWorks.com, and just sign up for your RDA of irony, and you will be the better for it. There's not much in the way of history Eugene doesn't know. And if he doesn't know, he'll find out about it and make you laugh over it. Leif Erikson Day, October 9th, 1003. Leif Erikson lands in North America and earns a holiday in Minnesota. The Vikings are notorious for their vices, but they apparently possessed one fatal virtue, hygiene. Hygiene! Whether it was their fondness for saunas, did you hear that? Did you hear that, Janie? Saunas. Whether it was their fondness for saunas or the antiseptic cold of Greenland, the Vikings' cleanliness ruined their chance to colonize North America. Starting with Leif Erikson in 1000, the Norse attempted to settle Vinland. Of course, the original inhabitants objected, but the Vikings were never shy about other people's property. Beyond their extrovert personalities, the Norse also had the tactical advantages of iron and steel armaments. No guns, though, Eugene, no guns. The Native American arsenal was still in the Stone Age. Nonetheless, the sheer number of the natives, Skraeling was the Viking name for them, made the prospect of slaughtering them rather demoralizing, and the Vikings' damn hygiene eliminated the most effective weapon for depopulation. Disease. The Norse had nothing to infect their opponents with, not a single smallpox to share. Even their livestock was healthy. The Skraelings would have had no resistance to European germs. Measles would have been a fatal plague. The Vikings then could have had Vinland to themselves. Just imagine how history would have changed. North America could have been one vast Minnesota. But the Vikings were too clean to succeed. The Skraelings had a 500-year reprieve before they were introduced to the Spanish, the French, the English, and smallpox. Woo! Party! Celebrating Columbus Day. My buddy Matt told me that he had a speaking engagement at a prison in northern Ohio this evening. That's part of his work. And said he would be wearing his T-shirt with the four Indians astride horseback with their rifles and the legend underneath, fighting terrorism since 1492. Said he might have to have a backup shirt because folks at prisons get a little uppity. Well, you know, the prison guards and whatever, the administration gets a little uppity about pictures of Indians with guns. Matt goes and ministers to Indians in prison populations. It's noble work. Columbus Day, please. But while we're at it, just because, well, you know, that's okay. I don't mind being first or near first. Can we please get Andrew Jackson off the $20 bill? Pretty please? And just a little memo to the Democratic Party. Will you stop venerating that genocidal monster? Every time I've ever gone to a Jefferson Jackson Day dinner, I've had a little fit of roll over me at the idea that somehow or another I was venerating that awful man. Let's get him. Look, Jefferson got relegated to the $2 bill and nobody will spend it. Let's just get Jackson off the 20, put Jefferson on the 20. No, better yet, Sitting Bull. Crazy Horse. Geronimo. But I favor Sitting Bull. Wow, wouldn't it be cool if there were millions of Horn listeners and we could get a campaign going, put Sitting Bull on the 20? Of course, that's probably somehow irreverent. Maybe we would want to rethink it. But at the very least, Roosevelt! He gets the dime out of veneration for his, or out of the remembrance for his tireless work with the March of Dimes. But Washington's on the dollar bill and the quarter. Why couldn't FDR be on the 20? Just an idea. Just saying. So, enough of that. Let's go on to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
In order for Geronimo to be on any kind of money, they would have to be able to bring him home to be buried with his people, and that ain't ever going to happen.
Well, why would those two things be connected?
Do you really think that would be allowed? They're too afraid of that man even now.
Probably true. Even with his skull sitting in the crypt at the Skull and Bone Society,
exactly.
Susan.
Exactly. Why do you think they won't allow him to be buried back with his people? They're terrified of him. He's been dead for over 100 years, but they're still scared silly.
True. Yeah, like I said, I favor Sitting Bull, but it probably would be disrespectful.
He took 13 warriors and held off the entire armed might of the United States. And that can't be allowed to happen or even be acknowledged.
Okay, so Jefferson, that could work on the 20.
Well, I have a problem with Jefferson.
Slaveholder?
You got it.
They all were. I mean, that's, you know, Hamilton, Washington. We can't put Lincoln on all of the money.
Well, There's always FDR. And, hey, there's John. And there's Truman.
Yeah, none of whom would. No, FDR, Kennedy, Truman, none of them would be allowed by the right wing on the currency. More than they already are. Now, you want to start a campaign? Here's a campaign, and I mean it would take off like a Kansas prairie fire. You know where I'm going, right? Ronald Reagan.
Oh, crap! No.
Oh, they'd do it in a minute.
Over my dead body. I've had enough of that.
They'd probably put a halo over his head.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, there we go. Let's put Jesus on the 20.
Let's not. That's the reason I called in.
Only let's put him on the 20 as a reasonable depiction of what he actually looked like.
Oh, that might be fun. Only if it was a 20, what was the currency at the time?
Now, see, you're wandering over into Ron Paul free silver territory, Susan. Be careful.
Well, the reason I wanted to call in is because the cult thing. Now, I got my problems with the Mormon religion. My family, some part of my family is Mormon. I have problems to the point where I reject it totally and everything it teaches. But, hey, guys, you're insulting my relatives when you do that to a Scott. You don't do that. And to me, the bigger cult is under the banner of the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yeah, that's why the pot, kettle, you know, done.
Exactly. They're all cults. They're crazy as it, I keep getting the feeling that wherever their main church is, it's downwind of an insecticide plant. Because these people are just, their brains are liquefying and running out of their ears.
Indeed.
One other thing, in that recording, that one person was saying, we've got somebody, an electable candidate in Rick Perry. And I'm sitting there laughing myself silly because he may be electable to the far right wing, to the masses of voters in this country. We're going to say the same thing that we've said to everyone in those right wing nuts. This has not been and never will be a theocracy. And the day it comes to be one, that's the day we have ourselves an armed revolution. Which we won't, because we won't allow it. These people are nuts. They're crazy.
Well, and see, there was a there was another piece in the New York Times today, Susan, that Dr. Bill sent along to me, and it was it is a tremendously well written piece. It's called "Is the Tea Party Over?" by Bill Keller. And the subhead is, for the answer, watch Rick Perry.
Yeah.
And I read it, and it was really, really a good piece.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes a lot of good points. But ever since learning about Wayne B. Wheeler a couple of weeks ago, I have really changed my outlook on a lot of things. Keller seems to be intimating that the Tea Party is done.
No.
No. And I say that because they represent that effective margin that can turn a race that is basically a 49% to 49% dead heat.
However, they might want to pay attention to how many Tea Partiers there are down on Wall Street.
What do you mean?
In the protests.
Elaborate.
There are Tea Partiers down there.
Well, that's okay.
Honest to God, bona fide.
If you go and read Chris Hedges' piece that I mentioned earlier,
they're not.
You will find that the Occupy Wall Street folks See, this is what happens with professional broadcasters. You will find that the Occupy Wall Street folks are operating on a policy of inclusion.
Exactly.
So until you start marching around with kill the Jew bankers Ron Paul sign, or what? Your N-word signs, or F the police, you know, they're going to be inclusive. They want the dialogue.
That's the neat part, is they're beginning to suck in Tea Partiers, the conservatives, because the conservatives are, that's their...
They're not sucking, no, Susan, I differ with you there, dear. They're not sucking them in. They're being sent. No less than this little punk Howley went down with the express aim of trying to discredit October 2011 by inciting violence at the Smithsonian.
The people that I saw were Tea Party, and this was at the very beginning. These were Tea Partiers in the very beginning when there was nothing there. They're still there. I see it occasionally in photos. I honestly think they're there for the long haul.
Well, that doesn't mean that they weren't sent.
No, it also doesn't mean that a Tea Partier can't believe in something. And if you get a conservative who is willing to say, okay, we're going to dump the social crud for now because the country's going to hell in a handbasket, we need to take on Wall Street, and these people are down there doing it, let's go join. That's what the Republicans need to be afraid of. That's all I'm saying, is if a bunch of Tea Partiers get that idea in their head, the Republicans are in deep trouble. Of course, by that time, so are the Democrats.
And the other thing to remember is the means of democracy that are being utilized by the folks of Occupy Wall Street. It is,
you know what it reminds
it is,
me of?
It's consensus-based.
Do you know what it reminds me of?
What?
Descriptions I've read of a thing.
Well,
an Icelandic thing.
Oh.
Everybody gets together and talks and talks and talks and talks until they all get it hashed out and everybody agrees.
Or, you know, and to that extent, okay, yeah, absolutely. But the extension, I guess, would be that it is more tribally based than it is Western white European based.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the thing. It's a trap that a lot of people fall into, that Athenian democracy as projected into Roman republicanism, yada, 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 down through the millennia, is the only way you can do it. It's not the only way you can do it. You know, the Iroquois Confederation were doing it in upstate New York before they ever met a white guy.
Yeah. Iceland is the oldest republic on the planet. And that's how they got started with this. In fact, they're still doing it. Things on the local level.
But as I understand the structure, they have broken, and a lot of this comes from the Hedges article, they have broken into caucuses.
Mm-hmm.
And they create a caucus wherever a caucus is needed. And they are using language that is decidedly, desperately inclusive. And they use some discriminatory tactics. For instance, in the big meetings, there's always a bunch of white males with their hands up wanting to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And they are by design discriminated against to make sure that persons of color speak, that women speak, that people who are traditionally left out of the power structure as it has evolved in this country are allowed input. One is not simply more right by virtue of being non-white male, but one is given a deliberate opportunity to be heard. Because frankly, you know, as a white male, I can say that white males have caused most of the problems on the planet. It's just a fact.
Would you like to hear what happened with the Occupy Portland thing yesterday?
Sure.
Well, they had a conflict with yesterday, because yesterday the Portland Marathon was due to be run, and that was a long scheduled thing, and it went right through the Occupy Portland deal. So what they did was, time to start the marathon. Crowd parts on either side. Marathon goes through, huge, massive, cheering audience. Marathon's over. Crowd goes back.
Oh, and I noticed that there's been a police development with Occupy Seattle as well.
Oh yeah.
The cops have said, and this is just delightfully indirect. The cops have said that they're going to ticket people who blow their horns in support of the Occupy Seattle folks.
Right.
And one cabbie has already gotten a ticket that's going to cost him something on the order of $160 or maybe even more. I'm not sure. I can't recall the exact number.
Well, I was raised in that area, and I know a little about Seattle traffic, especially during rush hour. They're not going to be able to back that up, because that track during rush hour is one long, everybody and their mother hanging on the horn. Anyway, without, you know, no protest. And then you guys add the guys honking it. And now it's not going to work. Not going to work. They might be able to ticket the occasional guy, you know, before it really gets going. But come rush hour, they're not going to be able to stop everybody. Can't be done.
No, but they'll stop some, and hopefully by stopping some, they hope to stop the... Right, because the peace is being disturbed in Seattle.
Yeah, right. I have a feeling if somebody fights it, it's going to be tossed out. The other reason I called is to bring to the attention of the audience. Now, I'm sure I'm behind the times, because I tend to be a little bit slow in these things. If you go up to YouTube, people, type in a word. It's, I don't know how you would pronounce it, apoplectica? A-P-O-C-A-L-Y-P-T-I-C-A.
Apocalyptica.
Apocalyptica, thank you. That is a Finnish band. The reason why these guys are good? Well, for one thing, they don't use guitars, they use cellos.
Yeah, rock and roll strings.
Not just rock and roll, metal, heavy metal cellos.
Yeah, ELO with ELO with a bad attitude.
Yeah, you would not have you haven't lived until you've seen a heavy metal audience just loving the Hall of the Mountain King done the way they do it. But it's still classical music.
Yeah, I heard a little bit of it because you sent the link over to Agnes, and She would listen to this. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Pretty cool.
The top of my head came off. Goosebumps stuck all over it. I'm going, wow. Anyway, if you want something new to listen to, check these guys out. They are good. It's four cellos and a drummer. That's all there is to it.
No bass?
Oh, give me a break.
Big old upright bass? Well, okay. All right.
I'll slap your hand, Bob.
Well, I know. Susan, have a lovely evening, dear.
Give my love to Agnes and everybody, and enjoy.
Will do. Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Oh, and by the way, there was a question in the chat room about the song at the top of the hour. That was the Scorpions, and it was called Winds of Change. I just like that song, and it seemed appropriate at the time. Onward we go. Lines open, 877-443-2366 or 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
Andy.
What's up, Andy?
Oh, man. A lot with this Occupy Wall Street. Pretty cool stuff.
I'm pretty inspired. I've seen a lot of more traditionally political types who are getting a little wishy-washy, and I'm not. I find it exciting and encouraging. And you know what? Things like this have to. If it like the Tea Party, Tea Baggers, Andy, if it springs full bloom, then you know it's AstroTurf. If you watch it evolve, you know you're watching something organic. Would you agree?
I took part in a General Assembly last night, and you shouldn't even say the same word, Tea Party or Tea Bagger, with the Occupy Wall Street people. There is no commonality whatsoever. This is as grassroots as you can get, as genuine, as original as you can get. I'll tell you, I was in amongst these people, and you could tell they've been living on the streets for a while, and there was a stench about them of what they're putting up with, of what they're doing for the working class people of this country. I mean, these people are the salt of the earth. This isn't even close to being AstroTurf. And anybody that says that in the corporate media, which they are saying, has got to get in a General Assembly and see if they could stand the smell of being around these people that are hanging out in the streets without taking showers.
But you're not offering that as some sort of criticism.
No, I don't mean it to be criticism. I mean,
it's reality.
People are sacrificing.
Yes.
Like crazy, and you don't have anybody paying for them to take showers or to get cleaned up or anything like that. I mean, these people are coming off of the streets, off of the buses, off of trains to get to these events. And then they're hanging out there for a couple of days, a week or two, or something like that. And they're running on the shoestring. But, I don't think that the threat against this not working is from the outside. It's from the inside. I don't think anybody can penetrate from the outside. It's, can these people continue to work together, and can the provocateurs be ferreted out, and the people that want to destroy this, and some of the authoritarian type of personalities, like some of these white males, which I did see happening, that there are some people that are really earthy people that are very strong-willed and very militant, and they will take this to a level that a lot of people don't want to go.
Where do you think that is, Andy?
I think there's some of these I think you hit it on the nose the other day when you were talking, that these are some of the people that are willing to tie themselves to trees or to build a little tree house and stay out there for months on end. This is the type of sacrifice that some of these kids are willing to work. And if you have that kind of willpower behind you, you know, you're willing to take a heck of a lot of risk. And you don't care for your own personal safety. And unfortunately, some of these kids that have that kind of mind bent are willing to take down a lot of other people with them. I mean, that's what I saw. And there's some pretty rugged individuals out there. I mean, you're willing to live on the streets, too, and camp out on a sidewalk. You got to be a pretty rugged individual.
Relatively kids, fearless, yeah.
Right, but these kids will also, they'll camp out outdoors, too. And a lot of them look like they're used to doing that. I mean, these are kids that have long beards. They have dogs. You know, they've got their dogs with them. I mean, these are mountain, some of these kids are mountain people that look like to me. And I used to live in Colorado for 20 years. But these are people of the earth. And a lot of them are very strict environmentalists. And a lot of the message is environmentally oriented as well, you know.
You know, Andy, it'll be a year this coming January that my dear friend and the executive director of Coal River Mountain Watch, Judy Bonds, has been gone, and there are YouTube videos you can go and see of her in California getting downright strident, saying it is the young people who will make these changes. And I can't help thinking she may have been speaking to some of the very same people that you're talking about.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, we've seen a lot of the civil disobedience that took place in the Coal River Valley would not have taken place without folks with this kind of mindset.
Right.
And
okay.
I just feel kind of, and I think you can probably understand what I'm getting at. I don't mean understand intellectually, more emotionally. I just feel kind of icky about any notion that I would suggest what direction that needs to go in. Do you follow me? Because it's their world. It's their world.
Right.
Their future.
Right. And they're the ones making the sacrifice out there. So who am I to say, or who are we to tell them? But one thing I wanted to convey to them, the major thing they should just concentrate on is holding the ground, is staying where they are and keeping the demonstration going, and not antagonizing the police. And one thing I found out, they had a very successful march last Wednesday, very successful. I thought there was maybe 1,200 people that they got at 12 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon to march through the streets of San Francisco, which I thought was pretty good for a Wednesday afternoon. But I found out, and that Wednesday night was when the cops came down and took all their stuff away and completely broke down the camp. And I was there when that happened. I'll tell you, when you have 60, 70 cops in a phalanx coming at you with masks on and headgear and billy clubs about 3-4 feet long, that's damn intimidating. I mean, it intimidated the heck out of me. You know, I give these kids a lot of credit for standing their ground, but I heard the reason the cops did that was because the people who kind of took over the group did not tell the cops when they had that march where they were going. And the cops, I marched in that march. The cops did an excellent job of stopping the traffic for us, of keeping us moving, of making sure that nobody got hurt. I really thought they did a nice job. But the quid pro quo was the upper echelons of the police force were upset at the so-called leadership, which is leaderless, but some people did take, and they decided not to tell the police where the marchers were going to go. And they did know the route that they were going to take beforehand, and that was a mistake. And some of the old timers that were there, the more flower children of the 60s that I've met and talked to, told me they were trying to tell these younger kids, these more militant that came, you gotta work with the police. If you work with the police, they'll make life easy for you. If you jerk around with them, you pull their chain, they'll get you. And they did. That night they came and they took all their stuff away. And I just hope that these militant, more militant kids, these more environmentally activists, don't get too, go too overboard and just cause problems for themselves that you don't need. I guess that's what I'm trying to convey.
Well, I understand what you're getting at, Andy, because, well, I've seen some of it. And like last, well, it was a year ago, this just at the end of September, when Appalachia Rising sort of set the tone for all of this that has come since.
Right.
And it really did. I can tell you, I could get him on the phone, and he could tell us all about what he went through. But before, and you know, it was in D.C. Before anything ever happened, Bo Webb sat down with the D.C. police, the park police, the Secret Service, you know, the lot of them, and explained, we are nonviolent. We are not expressly civil disobedient, although some people may wish to participate in civil disobedience. We're going to do A, B, C, D, and E, and here's our time schedule, and here's how it's going to go.
Right.
And we didn't have much trouble out of the police. I mean, you know, they did their thing. They made their arrests. You know, they had clean, natural gas-powered buses there to take people away. We had 130 people arrested or so. And there was a march that went from Freedom Plaza, exactly where October 2011 is, all the way to the White House, Pennsylvania Avenue, with stops at EPA and stops at a bank that funds mountaintop removal. And it went like clockwork.
Right.
And the only reason you wouldn't do that is if you want a confrontation with the police. And I just, you know,
And that's why I made the comment that this group, at least I can only talk about what I've seen here in San Francisco, that this group could be destroyed from within, not from the outside, because there are some militants that are very destructive that do want a confrontation and are willing, like I said, to bring everybody else down with them for their little games that they want to play, because they're pretty tough characters. And that's what is tough, because you know, they're trying to stay leaderless, and there's, of course, some pluses and minuses to doing that. The minuses are there's some overbearing personalities that can take over in some of these assemblies. And you talk about the white males, and they've done that in some cases, and that's what could be the demise.
Well, I mean, I don't think we can talk about this, Andy, without talking about certain realities. It is not by some curious happenstance that these consensus-based groups are forming using practically the same rules, and it's not because it started that way at Occupy Wall Street. Consensus-based decision-making is a big, big part of organizational structuring on the so-called left, because things like Robert's Rules of Order, which I spent a lot of my youth studying, are deemed to be oppressive,
mm-hmm.
And to a certain extent, I suppose they are, because they rely on a rule-based structure. An intensely rule-based structure that makes it possible to rule out the voices of certain people. Everything I understand is that they are trying to be inclusive of these voices, but I get what you're saying about the problems from within. However, the only thing you can do is kind of leave it to them to sort that out. I mean, unless you speak up about it or get someone to speak up about it.
Right.
I mean, there was, and I'm just tuned into all of this stuff as we're going along, Andy. I saw postings this weekend from ostensibly our side of the debate, with people being very concerned about where this is all going and using an incident with Congressman John Lewis in Atlanta this weekend to back up those concerns. I don't know if you saw this story or not, but Congressman John Lewis went down to speak to Occupy Atlanta. Now, they've got the same consensus-based decision-making that all these other groups have. And they have to have a conversation about who is going to be allowed to speak. Now, if I sat down, I'd say, you know, that is contrary to free speech. But that may not be what they're after, so far be it from me. But anyway, they had their decision-making process on whether to let a hero of the civil rights movement, a man who had shed blood in the streets, speak to them was too long, and Congressman Lewis had to get going. So he left. He said, you know, I wish him all the best. I'm behind him. I'm with him. Good for him. You know, said everything good that he could say about him. But still, there were people on our side who said, they wouldn't let Congressman Lewis speak. That must mean that, you know, fill in the blank of whatever their projection was. So there's all kinds of people out there, Andy, who are trying to figure out a way to define something that, by its very definition, does not wish to be defined.
Right. There was one politician, I believe, who tried to help out the group as far as being a liaison to the police, and he's one of the mayoral candidates, and he's a real progressive. His name is Avalos. I think it's Tom Avalos. But I haven't seen him down there, although I've seen people wearing T-shirts for his mayoral race, which there are like a dozen candidates. But other than his name mentioned, politicians, I do not believe, are welcome with this group. This is a group of citizens, and I don't think these kids are so fed up with the political system in this country that does not work for them one bit or work for their families that they do not want to see a politician down there. And I don't think a politician would want to be down there, to be quite honest with you, because they're not wanted, because they're the people, no matter which party, they're not looked upon favorably as doing the right thing. You know, they're not looking at nuances, a lot of these kids. I don't think a lot of these kids know what a candidate would even, like a John Lewis would even stand for.
Well, a lot of them, given their youth, probably don't know who he is.
That's right. But I think they lop a lot of the politicians into one pigeonhole, and it's not good.
Yeah, a part of the problem.
Right.
To that extent, Andy, I do have a problem. I got a problem with that.
And
the problem I have with that is that everyone is not a part of the problem. Dennis Kucinich isn't part of the problem.
Right, you and I know that.
Bernie Sanders, John Lewis,
right.
You know, there's a bunch
right.
of them. I mean, a
right.
bunch of them that aren't.
Right. I've had conversations with folks down there trying to find out what's going on. I say, you know, I've tried working through the system. I've been involved in DFA and PBA. I've worked on I don't know how many campaigns. We're not getting anywhere. I mean, we're losing ground. We're not gaining ground. So, I don't know if I can disagree. Hey, did you see what Senator K. Hagan of North Carolina came up with on Friday?
No.
Did you
what?
Hear in the paper?
No.
She's working with John McCain. See, this is where we lose. This is what really, really upsets me. She's working on a deal with John McCain to repatriate $1 trillion worth of overseas profits of U.S. corporations at an 8.75% tax rate. And she's going to try to push that through the Senate.
Oh, I saw that mentioned Sunday night on 60 Minutes because it's one of those things that GE's Jeffrey Immelt is pushing for all he's worth.
Oh, absolutely. Him and Andy Stern.
But at least Immelt had the common decency to acknowledge that it was tried in 2004 and didn't work, and said, so there's evidence to suggest that it won't work this time, but his explanation was, it can't be bad to have $1.2 trillion of American money come back to America.
Sure, so they can buy back stock and make the plutocracy even richer, because that's what happened with 92%. A study was done afterwards by some university professors, and they tried to track down what happened with the funds that came back. They said 92% of it was used for stock buybacks to jack up the stock price.
Well, and
every
see that,
company that took money back laid off more workers.
And that whole thing on ML on 60 Minutes was just a puff piece. It was pretty disgusting. In high praise of all the jobs that he has moved, primarily to Brazil.
Gee, that does us a lot of good.
Yeah, they're making locomotive trains in Brazil.
They say that
they're making jet engines in Brazil.
Right, 3/4 of the jobs that GE has created in the last decade has been overseas.
That sounds about right.
Doing, yeah, so what is he doing on a commission to create jobs here? He should be on the commission to outsource jobs from America, because that's what his forte is. That's what he knows how to do. He doesn't know how to create jobs here. He knows how to outsource. That's what Jeff Immelt is all about. And that's why, Bob, that these kids have got it right, that the corporations and the politicians are in cahoots, and they are doing absolutely nothing for the working class of this country.
And I guess if there's a problem out of that, it is that it creates... I freely acknowledge it's because of my Western prejudiced education. I want solutions to problems. As soon as I see an equal sign, I want something to put behind it.
Right.
And so, if you acknowledge that corporations are being in cahoots with the politicians is the problem, the first thing my little Western-trained mind says is, what then is the solution?
And these demonstrators are very, very anti-corporation. In almost everything they chant, you know, the word corporation will come up. It's either Wall Street or corporations, but they are the devils in this. And the politicians being hooked in with the whole Citizens United stuff and all the corporate money funding them makes the politicians just part of the problem.
But what I'm and the one thing I would point out is that saying that the politicians are the problem or are part of the problem is that broad brushstroke that the Republicans have been very successful at using over the course of decades now as a means of voter depression, voter suppression, and voter disillusionment. Because if they're all the same, why bother going out in any given election? And that's how you wind up with 20% of registered voters deciding who the party's nominee will be in a given primary.
If even that, you know what? But the Democrats don't help themselves. With that example I just gave you, that Kay Hagan and Obama's administration actually believes the South Korean trade deal is going to create 70,000 jobs. They're on the record in a July 13th Financial Times article. The Obama administration is on the record. The South Korean deal, in and of itself, is going to create 70,000 jobs here. Yet, you'll have the Economic Policy Institute saying it's going to lose 159,000 jobs. See, that? How can the Obama administration
get behind that?
Create jobs when none of these trade deals ever do? Yet the Economic Policy Institute is on the record in the same article saying they believe the South Korean deal will lose 159,000 U.S. jobs. You know it's going to lose jobs. And see, this is where the Democrats fall short, because here you're getting the same garbage. And Leo Gerard is on the record as saying both the South Korean and Colombia deal together will cost us 150,000 jobs. Now, Leo Gerard, was he from the...
From the steelworkers, yeah.
Union, right?
Yeah.
He's on the record as saying that. So here you have again, and then reining in the renminbi. You know, they're trying to pass a bill through the Senate to rein in the Chinese currency. I called my Senator Feinstein, and I told them to make sure they vote for that if that comes up for vote.
It's supposed to be voted on tomorrow.
You know what he told me? He goes, we can't do that. That'll start a trade war. I'm like, you son of a bee. Have you ever looked at the trade deficit numbers? The war's over. We lost. You sold us out. We're $1.2 trillion 11-year deficit with China. That's not a trade war. That's the reaping of Toledo, baby. you son of a bee. Trade war. We lost. It's over. Jesus Christ. Where are they coming from? See, that's the problem. It's a plutocracy. Just like you talked about Krugman's article. We're in a plutocracy. These people in the Senate, in the House, they do not understand what it's like to have your whole income stream and means of making a living just chopped away by this globalization. They do not understand it. And they're in a fantasy world thinking that we're somehow doing okay, and we're not. We're not. The war, trade war, it'll start a trade war. War's over, fella. War's over. And you guys lost it for us.
And because...
And Jeff Immelt for that, too.
Oh, sure. So, you know, so the question continues to obtain, what... Oh, I feel like such a fogey. I feel like I'm... I feel like a 55-year-old waiting for the Beatles to debut on Ed Sullivan. Yeah, they need a haircut. But the question it won't go away for me, Andy, and that is they're right in what they are angry at. They're angry at all the same things I'm angry at, to the extent that they're hardcore so-called environmentalists. So am I.
Right. Well, the Democrats
are
doing things that are in line with what their belief system is if they're going to try to win them over, because they're not doing it now. That's for sure. It's not happening. You know that.
So, you know, I'm of such mixed mind on this. On the one hand, like I've said before, I don't blame them for not having any faith in the system. Okay, they're going to register and they're going to go vote. What are they going to vote on, Andy?
As I said in my email, their belief is the system's all rigged. It's rigged.
And
I don't know who you go vote for anyway. Like, I can't, unlike you, I didn't, last election, I didn't vote for my Democratic congresswoman. I hate her. She's an H-1B visa person. She's a stock options for the plutocracy person. She loves the corporations here in Silicon Valley. She drinks champagne with them. She could care less what working people go through. I'd never vote for her in a million years. No, we don't have anybody to vote for in a lot of cases.
But, and I'm really struggling here, Andy. I'm not disagreeing with you.
I'm going to vote for my congresswoman. Never. Her name's Eshoo, Anna Eshoo. She's a corporatist to the hilt.
Right, and but the question is,
bring them in, honey.
There is a system in place that exists. How do you get another system without either changing it from? I mean, there's change it from the inside, or there's sit around and wait. I mean, what else is there, Andy? You see what I'm? I mean, do you see what I'm asking?
Hey, Bob, I've been trying to work on the inside, man. Like I just.
I know you have. That's why I'm asking these questions of you.
I've been doing DFA, PDA stuff, trying to push. And we're losing.
I guess...
I'm like Malloy. I wish I had the answers. It seems like with his speech that he gave, maybe he does have the answer. It's the big FU to this whole system. Malloy maybe hit the home run out of the park. Then I thought. It's a big FU. Maybe we just need that for a little while, just to give these guys the big FU. We have no faith in the whole system.
And again, what is it? And
Malloy hit it out of the park.
I'd love to ask Malloy, and maybe I will. What does it mean to do that?
And you know, he doesn't have the answers. I mean, he always says that, but something has got to change. And it's got to be pretty drastic. And the biggest thing probably is you got to get that David and Charles Koch money out of the goddamn system.
I don't disagree.
Out of the system.
You know, we hate Citizens United. Under the system,
right.
There is only one way to make, well, there's a couple of ways to make Citizens United go away. One, get enough Supreme Court justices on there to get another case up in front of them and revoke it judicially. That's going to be tough to do under stare decisis, okay? The other is to pass a constitutional amendment.
No, well, maybe we get a few of these Earth Firsters or these ecological real militants, and we get a couple hundred of them, and we march down to the Supreme Court, and we go in there, and we take out Clarence Thomas, and we take out Scalia, and we take out that other freak, what's his name?
Alito?
Yeah.
Yeah, but what do we mean when we
score and we carry those guys out and we dump them into the Potomac River? Maybe that's what it takes. And we say, don't come back.
And at that point, you know, it's verged into violence.
And the revolution. Then the revolution starts. I don't know. Maybe that's what it takes, Bob. You know, we're playing in such an we're playing under such an unfair, rigged system that those guys shouldn't even be on the Supreme Court. Ipso facto, Bush stole the election in 2000. He stole the election in 2004. He put these fascists on the Supreme Court that never should have been there. Whatever happens to those three son of a bees is probably justified in my mind. Is justified because the elections were stolen. They shouldn't be there in the first place to do their fascist dirty work.
The thing that scares me out of that, Andy, is what happens when the incredibly well-armed teabaggers decide that our side doesn't need to be on the court either, and they don't throw them in the Potomac, they blow their heads off.
All I can say is what Thomas Jefferson said, right? Maybe you need some blood spilt to keep the flower of democracy running, paraphrasing.
I know he said that. I'm not down with it.
You got to put the blame on the other side, man. I mean, I didn't steal the election in 2000. That wasn't my doing.
No,
I didn't get together with Karl Rove and the Koch brothers and plan that out.
The theft of the election in 2000 gave us John Roberts and Alito.
Right.
More importantly, you know, the guy, I mean, there are methods in place for dealing with that. It's called impeachment. And
get the bodies in there to do the impeachment because we can't get the people elected.
And why can't we? And again, you've worked with DFA and PDA. You know, my bellwether example for all of this every time, Andy, is Nebraska. Where's the progressive mounting a primary campaign against Ben Nelson?
Well, ask that to Rahm Emanuel when they made sure that Howard Dean had nothing to do within the DNC, and they got rid of his ass, and he had the most successful. You know what kills me? Here we had Howard Dean in there, head of the DNC, getting the job done, had a great electoral victory in 2008, elected a Democratic president, took the House, took the Senate, and what did they do? Those pigs threw Howard Dean for his success out into the trash heap. And the pig Rahm Emanuel, I get back to Rahm Emanuel all the time, but he's the poster boy for this fascism in the Democratic Party. They put him in there, and what do we get? Failure, failure, failure. Because they completely alienated the base, alienated the working people, alienated the unions. And this is what we get out of the Democratic Party. When you had the guy with a 50-state program, which would have addressed what you wanted to do, to put progressives everywhere, to fight in every precinct, to fight in every state, which is what Howard Dean did, and it worked.
But bear in mind, Andy, Dean would never have mounted a primary challenge against a sitting Democratic incumbent. And that's what Ben Nelson is. And that's why I'm asking these questions about, you know, we all hate what happens in November. Because we're...
Yeah, but later on down the road, look at Sestak and Arlen Specter. Look at Falter and Blanche Lincoln. Look at, what's his name? Ted Lamont and Joe Lieberman.
Yeah.
I mean, it has happened. I mean, things have gotten bad enough where people did come out of the woodwork and start going after, and the union guys and Trump and Gerard did get it.
I'll never forget that video image of Barbara Boxer walking the streets of Connecticut campaigning for Joe Lieberman.
And Joe Lieberman's best buddy, Barack Obama. kept campaigning for Joe Lieberman, too.
Sure.
Even though Ned Lamont had taken it. But at least, I mean, that might not have been at least that there was enough fervor to push some of these candidates that were going after the dinos.
Absolutely.
Colorado's another case. Mike Bennett against a guy named Romanoff, Andrew Romanoff, progressive. Again, Obama and the DLC sided with Mike Bennett, who won. Who's a freaking Philip Anschutz guy.
Yeah.
Billionaires guy. And the DLC and the Democrats went with Bennett when the progressive were trying to push Romanoff.
And again, it comes back to money. They had all the money. I mean, I've seen challengers here in West Virginia, Andy, to a miserable, god-awful right-wing Republican congresswoman named Shelley Moore Capito. I've seen people run against her that had a chance. And the DCCC, not interested. No money.
Right. Well, Dylan Radigan, and I've heard this from other places too, but to source him, just the other day I heard a clip of him, and the fact is that they say 94% of the time the candidate with the most money wins.
Yeah.
94% of the time in a congressional race.
It is an unchanged statistic that during the days of the Soviet Union, it was easier to beat an incumbent member of the Politburo than it was to replace an American member of Congress, and that remains true.
Right, right. During the 1970s, that's what they said. You could take, it'd be easier to take out a sitting member of the Politburo than it would be to take out a congressman in the U.S. House.
But by the same token, look what happened in 2010. How many Democratic incumbents went down the drain? A lot.
There's your 94% of the cash flooding in, and the massive media propaganda.
So if anybody was to even try, just to bring this back around full circle, Andy, if anybody was even to try to tell the Occupy folks, whether it be Occupy Seattle, Sacramento, Wall Street, San Francisco, L.A., what have you, if anybody was to try to tell them what to do, A, how much success would they have? B, what right would they have to try to tell them anything? And C, as far as it goes, what do you tell them?
I think you nailed it last Friday when you said trying to organize these guys or trying to get them behind some politician or something is like picking up water. I mean, these people are fluid. They're all over the place. And a lot of them are very, very anti-establishment.
And toward that end, you can
herd. These people are very independent.
Yeah, you can herd cats with a can of little Friskies.
Yeah.
No, this is butterfly wrangling.
And what you
have to do with butterfly wrangling, I spent the weekend thinking about this, Andy. You have to put the things that attract butterflies way out in front of where the butterflies are generally headed.
And
let them discover them for their own.
Right. And this isn't something that's happened overnight either. People might think that, but this has been growing.
Sure it has. I've seen it
grow.
I'm in a position to have seen it grow for years.
Right. This is like, you know, it's like taking a bottle of pop and shaking it up. And you've been shaking it up for years, and finally it's popped open. And it's only going to keep on sizzling out in a big way. Because things economically aren't going to get any better with the system we have. It is not going to improve. There's just going to be more pain. And more people joining in.
At which point, that has to be a good thing as long as the policy of inclusiveness remains in place, right?
Well, it does seem to be trying to be inclusive, but there is some, you know, groups within these individual units that probably would like to take some control, and you have to watch for the provocateurs. But, you know, overall, I know you've been watching the New York live stream, seem to know a lot. They certainly have tried to be inclusive. You know, they're taking on all comers. And to get kicked out, you really have to do some kind of Ron Paul stupidity. You know, you really have to do something egregiously racist or, you know, way out of bounds. to get your butt booted out of the group.
Right. You know, I caught Naomi Klein on Rattigan earlier today, and she was welcomed there to speak to them.
Yeah.
Just to try to tell them a little bit about the difference between what they're doing and, say, 1999 in Seattle. And she sees a definite difference with this because it's rooted, because it's in one place, because I hate to even use words like this, but because the target is one place. They're not going to move Wall Street. And therefore, they're at Wall Street and not going away.
Mm-hmm.
And so that she seemed to think that that was a net positive for all of this.
Well, I think she nailed that. I'm going full circle. That's one thing that I just hope they keep the ground on all these places. Hold on to the ground just to show the resilience and the fortitude that you have, that you really believe in what you're doing. Hold that ground.
Don't be run off. And
right.
you hope that the structures that are in place to keep folks fed and
right.
reasonably healthy remain in place. I saw over at Crooks and Liars today that they hosted a number of pizza sales.
Right.
The post today says we have bought solidarity pizzas for 22 cities so far.
Right.
But by the same token, the thing that happened in D.C. with that jackass from the American Spectator has to be taken into account, and it has to be accounted for, and it has to be dealt with.
Right. You will have that.
Yeah, it is unrealistic to think you won't.
That's correct. But they, on their website here, they do give a list of goods and food that they could use. And, like, I went last night, I bought a bunch of toothbrushes that they needed. I bought a bunch of bagels. What else? I bought bananas, apples. The things I saw on their list that I thought they would need. Water. And I brought it up there when I went, you know, just to add some support for these people. But that's what you have to do as long as the local community can keep on giving them support. And I saw pizza vendors dropping off pizza while I was there another time. And I think that's great. I think it really gives the people that are there an uplift, knowing that we support them, we're willing to spend money on them and give them the sustenance they need to keep going.
Yeah. And that effort will have to, if the movement grows, and it is, that effort will have to become more determined, because more people means more mouths, and more mouths means more food.
Right. Well, I got my points across, but yeah, just a quick sum up. Yeah, I don't think the John Lewis thing. I don't think this is a place for Democrats. Maybe a little down the road, it might be. But these people aren't into that right now, being led by groups in the whole political sphere that I think they believe have completely failed them. And I know, I agree with you that they're stereotyping, and they're using a broad brush, but I don't think this is a place for even somebody as renowned and as such a background as John Lewis. They don't want it. This is their thing, and it's on their terms.
It has to evolve.
Anybody else coming in.
It has to evolve, and this news just coming in, I got an email in from Tim in L.A. On the Occupy Boston website. They write, police are gathering en masse to remove Occupy Boston campers from the North Camp expansion and possibly from the main camp tonight at midnight by force if necessary. We're calling for all able-bodied volunteers to come lock arms with us in solidarity and defend this occupation from any police presence that may arrive. They advise, please write the number of the National Lawyers Guild on your body as well as personal contact, and in the event of your arrest, call a family member or other trusted contact with that information so the NLG can represent you.
Right. There's nothing scarier than watching a phalanx of cops, man, dressed to the hilt like these Ninja Turtles coming at you, man. I'll tell you, that is intimidating.
Oh, hell yes, it is.
No, it's not, man. When you don't have a weapon, when you have nothing except for your body, and these guys are, you know, just, you know, armed to the teeth, which they are, and they're ready to rock and roll, and they've been trained to rock and roll, it's damn intimidating.
Oh, yeah.
Damn intimidating.
And email just coming in from Mark in Florida with photos of the Miami FTAA protest. He says, intentionally kept my back to the encroaching and shooting police while I shook and thanked every late teenage anarchist-looking American. With emotions coming over me, I told each young protester how proud I was and never, ever give up. They come from all over the country. The war and permanent headquarters for Latin America free trade were what we opposed. Iraq is closing and headquarters are not there. 6,000 police, 15,000 of us, labor, green, and anarchists. These kids are tough and live on the road nationally, much like we all could.
Yeah. But what these kids tell me, too, is what the cops do. They take their bully sticks out, and they start clicking them on the ground and bouncing them off the ground while they're coming at them, too. So they make all this clicking noise.
Yeah.
You know, like they're ready to rock and roll. It's all intimidating. Then they'll yell slurs and stuff at the kids, you know, while the kids are chanting. The cops will be yelling back. You know, it's damn intimidating. Very intimidating.
But I don't know that these guys intimidate. Take care, Andy. Good to hear from you. Thanks for the report from the ground.
Righto.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye, Bob.
And I hope Brandon checks back in, because he didn't get the time he deserved Friday night. Let's keep rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, yeah, no, Andy pretty much covered what I wanted to touch on, but anyway, the Lewis thing, he wasn't objecting to not being allowed. Give me
no.
a break. I think that man of all people knows the nuances and the ins and outs of social movement, unlike probably most people in politics today. So, if he said it's cool, I'm taking his word for it. You know what I mean?
Me too, and that's why I sort of question the motives of those who said, I'm perturbed, I'm concerned, blah.
You mean on the progressive side?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's no, listen, I mean, I think that it should be sort of stated that, you know, the sort of, some of the people on our side, you know, it's not gelling with their own agenda. I mean, I just think, if the people are out there actually on the ground doing it, then, let them make the decisions. You see what I'm saying? I don't even want to hear about it from these armchairs. So they didn't let Lewis speak. Listen, I don't.
Well, and it's not even that they didn't let him speak. He had to go before they could finish their decision process.
Yeah, but it's just sort of like, I don't know, sometimes I think with some of these progressives that they're really not operating in the real world because they need to push themselves away from the computer or whatever, because people are out there because they don't have other options. You see what I'm saying? We're to that point for a lot of people.
Yeah, we're at the freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose point.
Well, yeah, you know, the losing their house, the job. I mean, these are real things that are happening for people who are out there. And so, I don't know. I just, you know, I don't really see a whole bunch of time for, you know, analyzing, you know, whether or not some politico is getting access. You know, people are out there because they had tried that way, and look where it's gotten them.
And there are a lot of people, Sandra, I think, who still want to work within the system. And, you know, God love them, let them try.
Well, no, but this is working within a system, per se, because any time you have this kind of push from people, it gets a response one way or another. I mean, Johnson didn't just say, oh, shit, I want to have civil rights, and, oh, I want Medicare. I mean, there was some pressure to bear for that. And I think that people, you know, because we've been living under this neoliberal shit for so long, they don't know what it looks like for people to sort of mobilize. And Obama did a good job of demobilizing what mobilization happened because of his run, you know? So there's a big learning curve here for people.
There absolutely is, and it's the fact, you know, what I talked about with Andy, Sandra, this idea that people get a little squirmy about movements and organizations that they fundamentally do not understand.
Well, yeah, and also, you know, there's you know, the idea that people can appreciate that these types of movements have an evolution, you know? It's just a joke. It's like, hello? Well, this stuff is not going to be constituted in a mode to take care of all needs right away. That's madness.
No, they admit they're figuring it out as they go along.
No, but it just shows, I mean, everyone should be aware of what the Tea Party was, a top-down front group.
Yeah.
Obviously. Because this is not that, which is why we're getting such, you know, panic and vitriol from the handmaidens of the enemy. I can't say anything else because the corporations, and I don't know if you saw that Jeffrey Immel interview. It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I did. It was pretty noxious.
For him to sit there and say, oh, Americans shouldn't be upset about corporate, what? No. That, you know, I just can't even believe the whole conversation. It's like, damn. And then people wonder why a lot of people have turned against Obama. That's who you put in charge of jobs in this country? That right there? Uh-uh. So, people, you know, you can see a lot looking at that interview. It's like, wow, the Democratic Party is, as long as it's dominated by these corporatists, they don't speak to people on the ground either.
No.
I mean, like you said, there's a few individuals, like you mentioned, which I agree with you, fair enough. But the two-party system as it is now, it's a problem. And the only other thing I want to bring up is, you know, the sort of historical cycle in this. Now, if you remember in 2008, the shit collapsed. A lot of people believe that it collapsed and it's never recovered. And everything we got going now is just a Band-Aid. And if you look at what happened in 29, you had a collapse. But it took a number of years for people to start freaking out on the street. And it's funny, the parallels are starting to look a lot similar to the 30s, which is scaring the shit out of me. Because this activity on the ground here coincides real nicely with, you know, what was going on 2 years into Roosevelt's presidency. You know, he wasn't moving too much either until everyone started hitting the streets because, hey, 25% unemployment and no safety net at that time.
Well, and what was that number that came out today, that 3.2 versus 6.9% number that hit? That during the actual so-called recession...
You mean the income dropping?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm sure 6.7% is what it's dropped since this crash. I mean, do you understand? That is just an astounding destructive aspect of the middle class. So, to me, what I'm seeing is, I don't want to say it's a repeat of the 30s, because, you know, I want to bite my tongue. I don't want that to happen. But, you know, we're not looking, it's not looking that great for the global scene. It's looking, and the banks in Europe, it's looking like that whole business in 1931 when the bank in Austria collapsed. I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, and of course I'm not saying that it's the same because it's always different. But I think that this is, you know, is pretty serious. Response, because when people say, oh, it's going to peter out, and peter into what? You know, the economy is not getting better. This is what I'm trying to say. And so where are those people going to go?
Well, that's one of the things that Naomi Klein alluded to, and that is that in 1999 when they were in Seattle, the economy was booming, there were startups,
yeah.
No layoffs, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
Well, this is a very different time.
Well, no, and that's the thing, like I said to you on Friday, I think that this is the response one has to have when your back is up against the wall. And, you know, and people like King, that resident King,
yeah.
The true fascism is coming out of these people because of people hitting the streets. Because what that man said was like, wow. I was gobsmacked. I'm like, oh, wait a minute.
Well, him and Cantor, you know, these are mobs.
Well, no, but his is even worse, where he doesn't want it to translate into policy changes like the 60s. You know what? I mean, the implication is that women's rights, black people's rights, environmental changes for the better was all the result of, and the end of the Vietnam War was the result of people hitting the street. So he's saying that, oh no, we got to prevent any kind of response.
But there's more, there's more and more of that out there in the right wingosphere, I guess is what you'd say. Look at this crazy ass speech that Newt Gingrich gave last week, the one where he attacked the Supreme Court decision relating Cooper versus Aaron. That's the one where Arkansas said we're not going to follow Brown versus Board of Education. And he says that was wrongly decided. In Gingrich world, Cooper versus Aaron is the legal equivalent of the Supreme Court declaring that 2 + 2 = 5. He said that in public, Sandra. And this is a man ostensibly running for the presidency of the United States.
Well, he was the same one that he also believes that certain speech is not protected either. And that, you know, I remember he made that.
Yeah, yours and mine.
A few years ago, saying that it's okay to curtail that. So he's a fascist, you know what I mean, basically. But the thing that's interesting is that you never heard nothing when the fake Tea Party was running around with guns at every other
bless Nancy Pelosi's little heart for making that point.
Well, yeah, she did do that. That's right. Which is, you know, listen, the smart Paulos, you know, they can see what's what, and the other ones will just drift along, and the fascists will show their true colors. I don't care what Cantor or Ryan are saying. We know what side they're on. They're not clarifying nothing except that they're fascists.
No, the measure that is being taken, I think, Sandra, you're right. It's not the measure of Chris Christie or Michael Bloomberg or Ryan or Cantor or any of those people. The measure that is presently being taken is the measure of the Democratic Party. And, you know, Nancy Pelosi said what she said. She didn't go to Wall Street to say it. She sat in her office. And bless his heart, Alan Grayson is, you know, he's not out there trying to co-opt anything. He shows up on Real Time with Bill Maher and absolutely schooled P.J. O'Rourke.
Yeah.
Because P.J. O'Rourke said bongo, I think, 12 times in a minute or something like that.
Yeah, and you had Fine go on TV saying what he said, which was very clear, too. I mean, where we can get it in mainstream is fine, but I don't hear none of these ones with any sense trying to co-op it. From Feingold to Grace.
No.
They do what they do in their sphere, and that's where they should stay, because it's just not on right now for this to be some sort of appendage of the Democratic Party, because the Democratic Party hasn't delivered, which is partly why the people are out. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so their little song and dance after the fact don't mean nothing. I just think that
well, I mean, you know, not that it's Wednesday or anything, but that Bible verse keeps popping up, Sandra. You know, be ye doers of the word and not hearers only. You know what? If Democrats go out and start acting like FDR Democrats, then there won't be any more questioning who are the Occupy folks going to get behind, because it will be obvious that they are beginning to do their jobs. Now, there's a hell of a lot of distance between right now and that.
Yeah, well, no, but there's also, I mean, if you look at the economic landscape, this is what I keep falling back on, because I don't see any policies coming down that's going to alleviate the situation that we're in now to make it so that all those people can go and get a job, or all those people now can, you know, take care of their homes. You see what I'm saying? All the things that made it so that social unrest wouldn't happen in the U.S. isn't going to turn around anytime soon. I actually think things will get worse before they get better. So
these numbers that came out certainly look that way, don't they?
Well, yeah, and so this whole idea that, oh, well, you know, eventually, they're just going to peter out. Everyone will do what? This is my argument I keep coming back to, because once, you know, it's like one of them kind of things, if you go black, you won't go back. People get a taste of this. You know, what the hell? What's the other option, Bob?
It's not like they're not going to go away because things got better, because, as you noted, they ain't gonna.
Right, and this whole idea of, I always go back to what you said a while back about you got to build a network to take care of folks. And so if that network is being built, which it seems to be in some meaningful ways, you know, it can be sustained. That's really important.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, people, I just see that as sort of crucial. And see, that sort of... operation don't call for the Koch brother money. That's just building community.
That's the miracle of what happens when you put the cornbread in the oven.
Right. I'm just saying we don't need the shiny buses. You see, you just need community commitment. And with the sort of internet still at play, it opens endless opportunities to develop and expand that community. Through the social networking. But that's just a tool, because that ain't out there on the streets, Facebook. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't know. I just kept, I just think that there's a much more upside to what's going on than down, basically.
And all it calls for is the tiniest little bit of common sense on the people who are working inside the system to keep their mouths shut.
Yeah, exactly. But and people need to be mindful of the right wing hate machine. The mainstream media plus the radio hell. That's there, and it needs to be sort of noted. But it's not like people can't get their message out. That's what I'm saying.
Oh no, the message is getting out, and listen, I want Flush Flimball out there, Sandra, calling the Occupy protesters human debris every day.
Yeah.
Keep doing it.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you're an idiot. Keep it up. It's just sort of like, I definitely see shooting yourself in the foot on his part. And he seems to be under attack by whoever this Mike Stark is and his...
Oh, Mike Stark's owning his ass right now. It's beautiful.
Does he have other people calling?
Yeah. Well, Mike Stark is... I mean, he's been doing this for years. Mike is actually out there... I mean, this is a teachable moment, and he's teaching people all the tactics that he's developed for getting around Mr. Snerdly. And helping, helping the Flush give birth to that aneurysm.
Yeah, no, because, I don't know if I was listening to Sam Cedar. Somebody was running that. I was dying because he was so upset. And, the idiots who call in, the one, megadiddles, them people, he just sort of ripped into that one poor
Yeah, was screaming at one of his ditto heads after Mike Stark referred to, and then there's a certain pill-popping right-wing propagandist.
Oh, shit, that was funny. Yeah,
and the funny thing is that ran right past the delay.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. I listened to that. I thought, oh, my God. Yeah, so anyway... So, I mean, it's just little small things here.
Well, can I ask one dumb question? And this is that moment where you have to speak for all the black people in America, okay?
Oh no, okay.
What the hell is Cornel West doing showing up on Fox?
Oh, I didn't. Listen, I am so overwhelmed with my work. I ain't even seen none of that. What happened?
Well, I ran the clip at the beginning of the program of Jerry Rivera being shouted down by the Occupy Wall Street folks. Fox News lies, Fox News lies. Well, back in the studio was Cornel West being the token liberal, explaining to the 90 and up demographic of Radio Rwanda what it is these little hairy people want.
All right. No, I don't know what he was doing on there. Well, I guess he thought, I don't know. Did he make any sense what he said?
No, because the Jerry Rivera was getting closed in on him. They just shut the whole damn thing down in a hurry and left.
Right.
They got run.
I don't. I mean, I don't. You know, I don't have any. I don't have any problems with Cornel West. Unlike that Tavis Smiley,
who was right there with him.
Well, he's suspect. I never will get past his tour with Wells Fargo to get black people to get subprime mortgages in the height of the bubble. So I'm.
Oh Jesus!
Him now. You know, he tried to back away from all that, but that was not.
And there, and I have to tell you, there was a moment on Rattigan this afternoon. I just happened to be watching. He has this one segment called The Rant.
Yeah.
And a woman came on and said something along the lines of as follows. Steve Jobs is dead. Steve Jobs pioneered a bunch of devices that make my job easier. But if you go and you search on Google for Steve Jobs dead, you get 3 million hits. If you search for Reverend Shuttlesworth dead, you get 144,000 hits.
No, somebody mentioned him like that?
Yeah, and she said, see, that's the thing. Steve Jobs made it easier for me to do my job. Reverend Shuttlesworth made it possible for me to have a life.
Is this somebody of color?
Yes.
Oh, hell yeah. Because, see, my friend on her Facebook page posted, the only man I'm mourning is Shuttlesworth. It's like, you know, there's a few people out there who know what time it is. It's like she wrote, you know, he made it possible for my children to be relatively free. I don't really care about, you know, an iPod.
And you know, bless my pink little heart, I was sitting there watching the TV just clapping.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I'm so surprised because, you know, of course, we were here thinking, because we had family members talking about R.I.P. Steve Jobs on their pages. I'm like, oh, no. You know, we're just bugging us. We're like, why are you people concerned about somebody who's worth $7 billion? You know, wake the fuck up. Anyway, you know, we're horrible here. But I was just like, oh, no. This man over here died. Do you even know who he is? Cricket. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, they say it all happens in threes. So it's Steve Jobs, Al Davis, and Reverend Shuttlesworth.
Al Davis, damn, I was like, oopsie, he went to glory. Damn, just like that.
Yeah, and dude, you know, David in Tennessee sent me an email yesterday. He said, you know, dude hadn't made a good decision in 15 years. He said if he made those decisions he made in the last 15 years, in the first 15 years of his football career, he'd be selling siding in East Bay.
Yeah, oh, shut the hell up. Yeah, no, listen. He had gone to glory. He's going to probably miss the best season they've had in the last 15 years on top.
Yeah, it was Kelly from Loop 21, Patty tells me, on the Rattigan Show.
Oh. Well, listen, I mean, that's, no, his death was definitely overshadowed by the, you know, acid dropper. That's for sure.
Yeah, and the one thing out of all of this, and I said this back when Ronald Reagan died, you know, and that national orgy of grief.
God, that was gross. Remember they had his body lying in state?
I was waiting for him to put him in the crystal vacuum coffin just like Lenin, you know?
No, I was thinking Brezhnev, yes. And we in the same frame, you understand?
but the one thing that I took out of it, and because I am essentially human and I have human sympathies, it began to come out just what Nancy Reagan's life had been during the torment of Alzheimer's. And it's one of those things, Alzheimer's is one of those things you wouldn't wish on your worst enemy.
Mm.
And so I kept saying, and I was on the air at the time, can we please start having a national dialogue out of this? If any good's going to come of it, apart from the orgy of grief, can we please have a national dialogue about what it means to be an Alzheimer's caregiver? Naturally, that was crickets.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, the same thing has happened now with Steve Jobs. And, you know, and I began to look at the number of people who have been killed, you know, who have died, you know, of the elevated celebrity class, so to speak, of pancreatic cancer. And, of course, it kills a lot of other people, too. It's the cancer that when they say you've got it, you start, you know, wrapping up your affairs because you're going to die.
Well, Patrick Swayze was the other one that
Bill Hicks.
Popped my mind recently.
You know, Patrick Swayze and Bill Hicks were both from Houston. Patrick Swayze and Bill Hicks were both.
Andy Kaufman. Did he die of that?
I don't know if that was. I'm not sure. But you know, with Swayze and Hicks, I noticed that, you know, they were both from Houston. That means that they spent their young lives breathing all manner of god-awful industrial toxins into their system. Because when you get pancreatic cancer, it's one of those like bladder cancer that generally means you've been exposed somewhere along the way to some nasty shit.
Yeah.
Now, they like to blame booze, they like to blame smoking, and they both probably have a role in it, but environmental toxins are a big part of it. And once again, we are not going to have, Sandra, the national dialogue we need to have, you know, about that disease.
Oh, no, they're never going to talk about the externalities of these giant polluters. Oh, no, we shouldn't talk about
And I'm not trying to be an ass when I say that, you know, it's October, therefore it's NFL Guys Wear Hot Pink Stuff Month.
Yeah.
But, when's NBA or NHL or NASCAR going to come out with, I don't know, maybe arsenical green for Pancreas Awareness Month?
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, it's interesting because when Steve Jobs first when that was first made public about him, I thought, oh yeah, he ain't long, but because of all his money, I guess he hung around for quite.
Well,
a while.
And bless her heart, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's hanging on for dear life.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you have access to every kind of possible healthcare imaginable and all the money you can spend on it, you know, you're gonna hang out for a bit. You know, they don't have to do the Steve McQueen route. They can
right.
stay here now.
Yeah.
Anyway, I am so evil. I'm just getting more and more. The older I get, the more evil I am. But
I've kind of got a dog in this hunt because that week I was gone from the air was because my pancreas attacked me.
Yeah. No.
And you don't have that happen without getting just a little nervous.
No, for sure. I mean, it's definitely something that I know you are so worried about it, as you should be. Along with your kids losing various organs, Bob. I'm sorry. Fuck that.
It's kind of hard not to take note of it, Sandra. Honest to God, it is.
Well, you know me. I'm inclined to tell you to take note and possibly think about relocating.
God, you know, I keep hoping. Every day I open the newspaper to the international section, just hoping I'll see that Canada has finally annexed the Turks and Caicos Islands so I can just go to Canada in the Caribbean.
Oh, my God. But anyway, I mean, I realize that, that's, not an option. But
yeah.
It's just kind of like, yikes, well, where you guys are living, Jesus Christ. But anyway, I don't really... I guess that's it. I guess unless Philadelphia.
Bad times in Philadelphia. But I had my little moment yesterday when John Fox sent Tebow in.
Oh, see, I wasn't really able. I just sort of heard a bit on the radio. No, how did that work out?
He led a comeback and ran for a touchdown and.
But those Christian freaks are sort of, aren't they sort of running policy in?
Right. Now John Fox has to play him. Now John Fox has to play him. And see, that's the funny thing. Tebow was number three on the depth chart, Sandra. So you got to wonder how number two feels about being number two. Well, I guess he knows he's really number two, doesn't he?
Well, who is the other quarterback?
I can't come up with the name right off the bat. Somebody will tell me.
Well, I still can't believe that other kid did he retire, the one from the Bengals?
I don't know.
Carson Palmer?
Didn't he do a commercial with Chris Berman from ESPN about Applebee's or Chili's or something? I guess
I don't know, but I mean, the thing that owner of that team is so vindictive that he is letting that, quarterback, a good quarterback, just language like that just makes me think, damn, these owners are about as disgusting as the owners of the NBA. You know, they're all horrible sort of sociopaths, these team owners. Because the NBA, they're like, oh, we want a 50-50 split. And 50% for the owners, I don't watch the owners, do you?
No. And that's a 50-50 split on merch, right?
Well, I think so, but it shouldn't be nothing like that.
Todd just wrote in. It's Brady Quinn in Denver.
Oh, hell.
You know, he's one of those anointed Notre Dame types.
With the huge head? That guy?
Yeah.
Shit, well, anyway, I don't know. I just am thinking, you know, no, not Tim. God, so he going to be starting next week?
No. Here's the beauty of it. They get a bye.
And
you cannot tell me, John, this wasn't in part of John Fox's contemplations. The Broncos get a bye next week, and the week after that, they go to Miami. It'll be the only sellout Miami has all year long.
Oh, no. They couldn't have wrote a better narrative for that freak.
And I looked up the schedule, and he doesn't face any, you know, I mean, it's not like the Steelers and Troy Polamalu are out there waiting for him. I mean, there's just not a hell of a lot of teams where you look at it and go, oh, man, that's a defense going to have him for lunch. It's not on the menu.
Oh, God. Oh, well. I mean, it's nice to have Tim to be hating on. I can't believe he's going to be on the main stage, though. Good Lord.
Well, I guess it hadn't officially been announced that he is, but once you've opened that Pandora's box, how do you not? Now, see, it's, they get the Lions after they get the Dolphins.
Oh, listen. How about them Lions? What's happening? Shit, the Thanksgiving is going to be worth watching. Shit, I can't believe it.
Yeah, that's the part where I guess I don't get my traditional nap this year.
Shut the hell up. You're going to have to be paying attention to that one. Anyway, you know what? I know I talk this football with you just because it irritates folks. See, that's the kind of mood I'm in. I need to get a grip. So
take it easy, Sandra.
And have a good one.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
Sorry, we have to have our little football moments. We're shallow that way. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Brandon from Brooklyn.
Hey, Brandon. Glad you called back, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's just been a little busy weekend for me. I had a couple little things got going on, and I'm just trying to get myself together for a family visit.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
that can be a challenge.
I call back, and you know, here I am.
I'm glad you did.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I just said I'm glad you did, because I didn't like the idea of cutting it short last week because you had on the ground info.
Yeah, well, it was all right. I mean, I said everything I wanted to say. I wish I had more info to give you. I wish I had gone back during the weekend so I can come back and give you fresh info, but I could just continue to expound on what happened Thursday night. It was a very good experience, you know. I went there with no expectations, and I was not nervous, I was not apprehensive, and everything happened to be just as I thought it would be, peaceful, crowded, and I managed to come at a time where they were holding a General Assembly meeting. And, you know, they were just really just imparting general information to the crowd, you know, for people that might, you know, all in an effort for people wanting to pool their collective resources and information.
And, you know, all cultures have to establish those ground rules, Brandon, before they can move on to bigger stuff like, oh, I don't know, end corporate personhood.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, one thing we've seen so far is they have staying power. This is not some fad. They're not going away. In fact, I saw a little bit. It was the top story on Keith Olbermann's show tonight. He interviewed Russell Simmons, but before that, he interviewed a couple of guys who were there. He said the permit for the park is due to expire tonight, but they have no plans on leaving. And my wife and I were wondering, like, what's going to happen? Will the mayor drop the hammer? Will he finally say enough is enough and try to clear the park? But then I saw a posting in Politico online that said the mayor announced they could stay as long as they want. Now, that information is from Sunday.
What's interesting out of that, Brandon, though, is that, as I understand it, Zuccotti Park, Liberty Square, is actually private property.
You are correct. It is private property. But I think they're trying to pressure Occupy Wall Street to put up some kind of permit money. I am not privy to the details. But, you know, from what I understand, they are determined to stay there. Now, if anything happens, you know, with the NYPD, it'll hit the 10 o'clock news cycle.
Well, I mean, do you get a sense of, or any sort of pulse, here I go, now you're responsible, Brandon, for speaking for all of New York City,
okay.
Or at least Brooklyn. has there been any kind of pushback over those cockamamie remarks that Bloomberg made about how they're trying to take jobs away from, you know, what?
I've only seen reactions on Facebook. I haven't heard any vocal responses from people making the news saying, I mean, my reaction when I saw that, I'm like, that's how I was. I'm like, huh? Are you kidding me? You know, how is this going to cost jobs, you know? Sounds like the mayor's trying to, you know, advocate for his corporate friends.
Well, you know, what I found kind of ironic, Brandon, was the fact that on the one hand, this is Michael Bloomberg. Well, okay, let me back up. If, as I understand it, and you'll know better than I, but if you go down there, there's a lot of people talking about the planet, talking about environmental issues. You know, Bill McKibben from 350.org was very warmly welcomed there.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. So Mayor Bloomberg gave $50 million, you know, which ain't chump change.
No, it's not.
To the Sierra Club for their Beyond Coal campaign. And then he turns around and talks about these kids who are decided, you know, who, as Andy notes, have a decidedly environmental bent about them, and he says they're trying to take away jobs. I mean, I heard that, and I shook my head so hard the little marbles rattled around.
I really can't gauge what the mindset of Bloomberg is. It sounds like he's trying to play all sides. You know, I think he had a typical reaction about the crowd when they started out, and now he's reversing himself somewhat. You know, it's hard to gauge where Bloomberg is on this, because as you're noting and as I'm seeing, we see conflicting comments. So, you know, I wish I could.
Let me ask you this. I mean, are just folks on the street round and about talking about this? I mean, it's a big city and there's a million things going on. Is it big enough that it's getting the attention of the workaday New Yorker?
Based on where I work and where my wife works, yeah, it's starting to get attention. Not so much where everyone's chattering about it, but you know, it does make the news, and you know, I'm chatting with certain people that I know, and you know, people who are like you and me, that they are totally with it. They totally get it. You know, they understand their plight. We have all been affected by this. You know, my pet peeve, you know, no, I should say, the reason why I stand with the 99% because I am them. And plus, in the 2008 collapse, 33% of my 401k went away. Thanks a lot. Where did it go? I don't know. You know?
Oh yeah, you do. It's a couple of doors down from where the Occupy Wall Street protesters were hanging out.
Yeah. So you know, I have a dog in this fight. You know, and I just want what they want. I want to see fundamental change in the way our government treats us, in the way our government does business. Not just business, but the way our government makes decisions. I mean, they prioritize, the priorities are backwards. They give their ear and they give their time and access to the 1%, to the top 1 or 2% of this country. And the rest of us, you know, it's like, just go stand on the side and wait. You know, we'll tend to your needs later.
If it's not too prying, Brandon, who is your member of the House?
My member of the House? Wait. You mean, like, who lives with me?
No. Member of the House of Representatives.
Yvette Clark.
Okay.
And let's see, my senators are Kirsten Gillibrand and Chuck Schumer.
Yeah, Chuck is a Wall Street kind of guy.
Yeah, our state representative is Eric Adams.
Well, does contacting your member of the House of Representatives have any play for you, or is she just too far gone?
You know what? I have to reach out to her and find out where she stands. It has been my experience that she's been on the right side of the issues. But you know what? Where Wall Street is concerned, who knows? I have to check into that.
Well, if you do, it'd be curious to find out, because if all of us started doing that, you know, it's one of those things you can do, you know, with a telephone, sitting at home, sitting anywhere, Brandon. Just find out, ask your elected member of the House, where do you stand on Occupy Wall Street?
Because
that'll answer a bunch of questions, frankly. At least I think it would for the Horn family.
Yeah, that's what we talked about Friday night. Like, whose side are they on? Are they on their side or are they on our side? I mean, it's a simple enough question. I mean, if you're on their side, just like the GOP, you're serving their interests, you know?
Yeah.
You're on our side, you're serving our interests.
Yeah, this is not a difficult question. Brandon, I'm so glad we got to talk again, and good luck with the upcoming the visit, or as you described it. Hope it goes well for you, and I hope we talk soon, my friend.
We will talk soon, and I'll call you again after I've paid Occupy Wall Street another visit, Bob.
All right, good deal. Thank you, Brandon.
All right, you have a great night. My wife says hi.
Hey, tell her I said hi back. Bye now.
All right, bye.
Brandon calling from Brooklyn. Hopefully we'll get another on-the-ground report from Occupy Wall Street from him in the coming days after he attends to family matters. Time to get out of here. Time certainly flew away from us. Great conversations this evening, one and all. Thank you for all of your conversations, your participation in the chat room, everything that makes the Horn such a very, very special place. It is much appreciated. Thank you for your contributions that keep the lights on here. None during the show, but we'll get by. We'll figure out a way. Thank you very, very much. Remember, tomorrow night, Dr. Bill, the Prism series, and then back as regular on Wednesday, then I'm out of town on Thursday and Friday. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy, to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, to my head writer and spiritual advisor, David in Tennessee. Thank you to John Fox, who keeps the website up and running, and so many other things. To Ben Birch, thank you. WhiteRoseSociety.org since 2002. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Go, learn, become part of the solution. Rick Smith is next, and always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.